Hey, everybody, I am Kai Rizdahl.
And I am Molly Wood. Welcome to Make Me Smart, where it is going to be a wild ride.
Why? Because we're in the same studio, by the way.
That's the same studio, and we can't stop goofing off.
As you might have just heard.
We are joined, as always, by you, dear listener, your thoughts, your questions, your information, because none of us is as smart as all of us.
Somebody has to do this bit, so it will be me. What we're going to talk about on the broadcast today, on the show, on the podcast, whatever you want to call this, taxes. We're going to talk about taxes because it's tax time. Am I supposed to say who the special guest is?
But in a fun way.
Well, it is going to be fun. So here's how fun it's going to be. Just let's hit that.
You're not familiar with the phrase, in this world, nothing is certain but death and taxes?
High bracket, low bracket. If Uncle doesn't get his cut, we nail your hide to the barnyard door.
Taxes! Beautiful, lovely taxes!
Look, if you're paying taxes, you're making money. That's the deal, right?
That seems like good news, actually. Yeah. We will have the CEO of H&R Block with us, and then we also have the quite delightful and entertaining author of an entirely fascinating book about tax policy. We're going to get to all of that later. But before that, we're getting our fix.
All right, we didn't get to do this last time, technically because I was on vacation, but also because we had some good NAFTA stuff to share. But now that I'm back, we're going to talk about the news. So here's what I discovered. And I said this yesterday in the Facebook Live thing. It is not possible in this day and age to only dip in and out of the news. When I used to go on vacation, you could dip in every couple of days and it'd all be fine. You could figure out what was going on and boom. Now you dip in and you're like, what's going on? Yeah. It's been 2 hours since I checked and the world, it's craziness.
It is like a very, very, very fast moving river right now.
Yes.
Although interestingly, it's funny because the more we talk about it, the more we start to realize that there's a whole chunk of humans in the middle. Not necessarily the middle of the country, right? But middle of the philosophy, the middle of the this, the that, who are not paying attention. And what must that be like?
Well, so that's exactly
to not
right.
have to and, get torn apart by the river every minute.
And that's what came to me literally like 2 hours ago. I was listening to another podcast, which shall remain nameless. It's called Pod Save America.
Tripod. Hashtag tripod.
Tripod. That's true. Oh, good. You're so good. You are so good.
No, you are.
It's the branding thing. Anyway. And so here's what came to me as a result of listening to that conversation. We are living now with all that's going on in Washington and the economy and in politics and how fast things seem to be moving. The middle, as you just talked about, isn't experiencing that. They are having a trickle-down version of reality because those of us in the news business are like, it's a fire hose, right? But everybody else is like, yeah, you know, I check the news every couple of days or I'm not watching it every second or I'm not on Twitter.
Yeah.
And they don't have to – they have a different appreciation of reality. That's my point.
I love that phrase and I love it especially because the thing that trips me up it happens, you know, like today, it happens when I walk from my hotel to the LA studio through a scary tunnel. Probably should have taken a lift.
It's all a different thing. But wait, do you walk through the Second Street Tunnel?
I did walk through the Second Street
Tunnel.
Don't do that. Just today. It was my first time. And I walked by a guy, you know, going to the bathroom. Like, I'm a foot away from this guy who's just on some newspaper. And then I come in and there's the pictures of the Syrian children on the CNN big TV that's right outside my office. And I remember that we get super caught up in this river, but that there's a human cost to everything that is happening and that will trickle down.
Right.
And the human cost comes from these sort of news stories. And that could be the buying and selling of your data that happens as a result of the president signing the bill revoking protections for you know, protections that would let you control how your information online is used by companies. That can come from environmental regulations that are weakened. That can come from labor protections that were weakened. There's like a million ways that this will trickle down, both in terms of awareness,
right,
but in terms of how it lands on human beings. And that is the part that sometimes I feel a little disconnected from. And then I feel too connected to it, which is how I feel this morning.
Well,
and I feel super upset.
Well, that's the thing, because perspective changes when you are not in that river, right? I mean, so I spent a week, we went back east, we did the college thing, and it was great. But coming back to the news, I realized how perspective had shifted not being in the news all the time. And it was really interesting to get back in and go, wait a minute, seriously, this is what you, the media people, are talking about all the time? Isn't there more important stuff? And arguably there is, but also arguably a lot of the stuff that is happening now at such breakneck pace in Washington and in the political America is trickling down, like the privacy stuff and like, you know, healthcare reform that went nowhere but is yet now still being talked about and what would happen with that. And all of it is just so mind-numbing that as you experience it not in the river, it's just a different sensation.
It is. I do think, though, it's funny because as it trickles down, I've said this before on the show, but the equal and opposite reaction.
Yeah, explain that a little bit, because you said it in a Slack the other day, and I confess
I
forgot.
I feel like I said it on the show. I feel like I said it on the show, but I can't really remember.
But you might not have because it was news to me.
Oh, okay.
So that's what
then probably I didn't.
Right. Okay.
Or you don't listen good. One or the other. One or the other.
Ouch. Ouch. But okay.
We say a lot of things on this show. It's very long. It's a very long show. Yeah. It's that I've been approaching all of the things that are happening in this administration with the kind of super scientifically minded idea that for every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction. And what has been striking is that for everything that happens in the news from the administration, there's a, you know, change doesn't just happen in a vacuum. So we're seeing dramatic change. We're seeing more than we would have thought. Like, yes, the crowning legislative achievement so far of the Trump administration is rolling back privacy protections on your, you know, browsing data. But a lot is happening. And then a lot is happening in response to that. And some of that is about people waking up and saying, whoa, whoa, my browsing data was for sale. Or California, you know, California and other states saying, okay, well, do what you want on the federal level, but we are going to enact our own requirements for cars, that will probably lead the auto industry to build cleaner cars, regardless of what the federal regulations say. It's like people are getting woke. Because they're paying attention. I feel like I can't say that.
No, that's okay.
But
that's
they're paying attention.
Maybe I can. I don't know.
To things that they maybe weren't paying attention to before, and then there is an equal and opposite reaction,
which is trickle down reality. I think that.
Which
I think we're saying exactly the same thing. That's
we
exactly
are.
Right. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
And I like that.
And I like not getting into the individual pieces of news because good
lord. No, because we don't need to. Because you know what? I think people who listen to us on this podcast. They're in the news, right? And they understand what it's like to be in the stream. And I will just say now, do yourself a favor and take like 3 days off from the news and see how you feel about the news when you get back because it totally changes things.
Did you feel like way worse about the news though? Or did you just feel exhausted that it was still going on?
I felt exhausted and I felt, seriously, as I said, I felt, oh my God, this is what's in the news. This? Really?
Yeah.
And it was tiring.
I got an email after... an interview I did when I was hosting while you were gone.
Yes.
With the lovely Adrienne Hill. And we talked about escapism being a big theme of the movies and made a joke about it, like, especially right now. And someone wrote in and they said, are you saying that because of President Trump? And is this all about your personal bias and you want to escape from this administration? And I thought about that a lot. And what I came to was like, no, change is exhausting. When you start a new job, you're tired. When there's a new administration after 8 years that has a completely 180-degree philosophy from the administration that was in place for 8 years, there is upheaval, and upheaval is emotionally taxing no matter where you stand on the issues if you are in the river. Right? Paddling is hard work.
No. I think that's totally right. So. I think that's totally right. And I think if we as consumers of news are exhausted by this, imagine how, not to have pity for politicians because they chose that life in theory in a spirit of public service, but imagine how people who are actually literally at the center of the change are feeling. Can you imagine how tired Paul Ryan is or how tired Chuck Schumer is or how tired any of those folks are? Because this now, if we think our life is consumed by this 24 hours a day, I just can't.
Yeah.
You know?
All right. Meanwhile, in taxes, we'll do a little bit of tax news to set up the rest of our episode.
A little bit of tax news.
I thought I was like beating myself up a little bit because I hadn't done my taxes yet a few weeks ago. And then I did them a few weeks ago. And I now realize like, dang, I was on it.
You were
so
far ahead of the power curve.
Because I've now talked to all these people who are like, it's mostly because I wanted to buy a new laptop and I was hoping I would get enough.
No, seriously?
Oh, yeah.
But that, I mean,
totally.
You know the whole thing that if you get a refund, you're giving the government your money for nothing, and that's not a good financial,
well, it turned
personal
out,
finance thing to
it
do.
It turned
right?
out I was doing a great job because I did not get a big enough refund for a new laptop. So
there you go.
Yay.
Ideally, it all balances
I
out.
I guess.
Ideally,
I could get
it all
a new iPad. Anyway, there is a report out today saying enjoy doing your taxes this year because next year will be a nightmare.
Yeah.
Because there are cuts proposed at the IRS that will mean worse customer service. Don't laugh. Stop laughing.
What?
A more difficult process and, frankly, more tax evasion.
Yeah.
It's like a lose-lose when you cut the IRS because they can't gather the money that we need to run the government.
That is true.
The White House... Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, and this comes as the President of the United States and his folks are working within the White House, it has to be said, within the policy staff at the White House on a tax reform package that the President has promised. And I point out that it's, and this is from a Politico article, I should say, I point out that it's inside the White House because... It does not include the legislature. It does not include Paul Ryan, the Speaker of the House, whence the bills must come. And that's going to be problematical for this whole political purpose, as we saw, oh, by the way, with the health care bill, which was, oh, by the way, a tax bill. But we're going to get to that later.
But that's weird, right? Like, that's not, I mean, I know that.
That is not
I know
normal,
that White
right?
houses have, right? In the normal, not normal.
Right.
Sometimes I think we're flogging that. And then I get these emails from people who are like, thank you.
No.
Because the White House always has a legislative agenda.
Yeah, absolutely, as they should, right? I mean,
but
you know.
Hunkering down and secretly right. crafting, apparently, like a tax bill
yep.
with only one person yep. on staff who knows anything about tax policy. And then what are they going to do? Like hand it to Congress and say, you should totally do this?
Kind of.
I don't think that's kinda. How that works usually.
So to the more fun part of
yes.
taxes, we're going to get there in a minute, I promise. Wait, is that... You just blew his mind.
Nikki, you're so fine. You blew my mind. And then I said blew my mind because it was implanted.
Oh, my God. That's
the bridge
great.
Inceptioned me.
Wow.
Whatever happens with tax reform, obviously of huge interest. I brought it back to our next mm-hmm. guest, Bill Cobb, the CEO of H&R Block. But we're doing this a little out of order this
time. We are shaking it up, innovating.
Innovating.
Blowing your mind.
Because I feel like this is like, look at you. With the comedic callback. What a pro.
Or dad joke. Pick your pick. I don't know.
This is like Bill's answer to the Make Me Smart question yeah. is like what you need to hear before we do yes. a really long interview about taxes.
So the Make Me Smart question, just so we all remember, is what is something you thought you knew, but then it turned out you were wrong about it? And here's what the CEO of H&R Block, the tax people, Bill Cobb, said.
That taxes were boring. When I first got this job, my wife said to me, could you have found a more boring industry, you know, after being at eBay and everything? And since then, she's come to, you know, it's really a highly emotional business. And that sounds bizarre. But the refund, you know, and 85% of our clients get a refund. The number for the U.S. is 75% of people get a refund. And that, for many Americans, is the largest financial transaction of the year. And, you know, people liken it to it's your bonus. And I never saw that. Was that I just thought, oh, you do your taxes, it's drudgery, you know, you get it back, you sign it. But this is really a critical event, you know, in a lot of people's lives, especially what we call the early season group or the, if you will, the big refund crowd, which is the group that comes in, races in January and February and wants to file as quickly as they can to get their refund. So that is actually ties back to my work, obviously, but it is it's always a fascinating thing to me.
Taxes are not boring, I'm telling you. So it's Bill Cobb, CEO of H&R Block. Here is the whole interview that Molly and I did with him.
So is it a busy time of year for you, busier than usual for you as well?
Well, it's very busy in our offices. So from February 1st to April 30th, we do almost 80% of our revenue. Many of us back here in Kansas City are starting to plan for next year and getting ready, not like, you know, the next season. When I first started at Block 6 years ago, I would go around and say to people, hey, how long have you been here? And they'd say, oh, this is my 7th season. This is my 11th season. I felt like I was leading an NFL team or something. But,
So when Congress and the White House start messing around with tax policy like they are threatening slash promising to do in the next couple of weeks and months, does that make you crazy?
No, because, you know, it's one of the areas that, you know, a Congress, a president always dabbles in. Tax policy is very important to businesses. It's very important to individuals. I don't try to overreact to any particular initiative because you have to wait until the dust settles, till it becomes law for us to really get engaged, because our business has to be built on the accuracy of our tax event, of our tax returns. So to spend a lot of time watching the vagaries isn't very helpful mm-hmm. to serving our clients.
Although there's a lot of optimism in the business community about the possibility of a more favorable regulatory environment, a more favorable taxation environment. And so I would imagine that for you as a CEO of a business, there could be optimism there combined with, I would imagine, some confusion about the tax code has the potential to increase your business, right?
Well, I think, based on what the president has said and all the soundings, generally this is going to be a tailwind for us. You know, we have a number of financial products we offer, so any decrease in regulatory reform is of benefit to us. Whatever individual tax changes there are, people are always looking for help, and they don't necessarily trust the government or the IRS, and that's what's been able to sustain the industry and certainly to sustain H&R Block, because people want to make sure that they're getting every deduction and credit that they're entitled to, that they get their maximum refund, and yet not leave themselves open to an audit.
So a complicated tax code, right? Tax complexity is a business advantage for you.
A lot of people say that, but in some ways it's not, because we have to train everybody on that. And that's one of the reasons why we just partnered up with IBM Watson to join man and machine in terms of being able to come up with the best outcome and find every deduction and credit. I think the president's right. We do need to. There are things we need to streamline. You know, I think that there are smart things that we can do. I do think because it has evolved to be such a massive document, because there is a real tax code. It is 74,000 pages long. mm-hmm. So to just say I'm going to put it on a postcard, I think isn't very credible. I think it has to be done in an iterative process, and yet you can make some real progress in terms of simplification.
Although, like you point out, 74,000 pages is nothing for Watson. Can you talk a little bit about that partnership? Don't you worry that, you know, Watson could put you out of business? I mean, if computers can sort of already prepare taxes to some extent, is that just a chance to get ahead of the algorithm competition?
No, I think that certainly the way IBM approaches this, and I was just with their CEO, Ginni Rometty, the term they use is augmented intelligence, because they believe that it is the best of man and machine. So no, I don't worry about that per se, because I do think that the best outcome you can find is when you have man and machine working together.
Let me get back, if I could, for a second here, Mr. Cobb, to the idea of the complexity of the tax code. I mean, you talk a good game, honestly, about wanting it to be easier for consumers. But the fact is, you lobby the government to prevent them from doing things like automatically filled out tax forms and things like that. I mean, tax code complexity is your business model.
Well, let me talk about that, Kai, because I think that there's a little bit of a misunderstanding here. I don't think it's a good idea because the IRS is going to have to be the one to undertake that. The IRS is still operating. They still have some COBOL and Fortran developers because some of their systems are so outdated, and with all the reductions that the government continues to do with the IRS, and I'm not getting into the politics of that, mm-hmm. It's just not credible to say, oh, we want to have a number of free, every return should be free. But I get a little concerned when people just assume business is bad, government is good. And because we've been successful as this industry working with the IRS and working with the other tax companies.
I don't think anybody out there is assuming the IRS is good and H&R Block is bad, right? I mean, you're you know what I mean?
No, but I'm talking about recent articles that say that, you know, we're lobbying. We have people in Washington because of what you talked about earlier. There's a lot of things that Congress and the president and the Treasury Department ask us about. So we employ people there who are talking about a whole variety of things. And one of them happens to be pre-filled forms. But to say that we're spending millions of dollars to prevent this is just not true.
Who does your taxes? And are they done yet?
I was actually talking to someone recently. So H&R Block does my taxes.
All right.
I've made it a condition of employment. Everyone in our company does, either uses a digital solution or comes into an office. My tax pro, I never see. She's based up in Brockton, Massachusetts.
Wow.
I've been using her since I started with the company. She's terrific. She emailed me the other day, hey, where's your packet of information? So this weekend, Kai, that's what I'm doing, is finishing that up and putting together all my information. And then I'll get that off to her, and she and I will talk on April 10th or so, and she'll tell me the good news and the bad news. And we all use H&R Block to do our taxes.
That makes me feel way better, actually, because I just finished mine last night and I was feeling like I was up against it.
Now, are you doing it yourself, Molly, or are you going to come in and see us?
I used the internet. I did it myself. It's a pretty simple public radio situation for me, Mr. Cobb.
Well, we certainly have that offering on the internet.
Bill, thanks very much for your time.
All right. Thanks, Guy. Thanks, Molly.
So there you go. The business of being in the tax business. Although I think we have to do what's called like a corrective back announce here, right?
Yes, I'm obsessed with this. Thank you. Thank you, Kai, for teeing up my obsession, because I read this whole article on Vox about how the tax code is not actually 70,000 pages. It's actually 2,600 pages of actual tax code. Although, as with many such articles, when you then read the whole thing, you realize, okay, well, if you have 67,000 pages about the tax code that are attached to the tax code, it's clearly still really complicated.
Right. The tax code is hard.
But still, everyone says it. What I think is so interesting about the business of being in the tax business is how protectionist the business of being in the tax business is.
Totally.
Which is kind of the whole point of the book.
And it's a multi-bajillion dollar business.
Multi-bajillion dollar business.
That's the deal.
In fact, that's the topic.
It in fact is.
Look at that.
There you go.
It's like a story arc.
There you go. Get out. We did that.
That is the entire topic of the book written by our next guest, T.R. Reid. He's author of A Fine Mess, A Global Quest for a Simpler, Fairer, and More Efficient Tax System. We got a bunch of questions from you about tax policy. Most of them made their way into our interview with T.R., and we'll hear that in a minute.
With the launch of ChatGPT, Sam Altman and OpenAI reinvigorated our imaginations and fears of a world with artificial intelligence. While the company looked like a stunning success from the outside, a battle was brewing within on what the future of AI should be. Almost a year after launching ChatGPT, that battle erupted into a war when the company fired its charismatic CEO, Sam Altman. From Wondery, Business Wars is a podcast about the biggest corporate rivalries of all time. And in the newest season, host David Brown digs into the philosophical differences within OpenAI that culminated in Sam Altman's shocking firing, the chaos that followed, and what it means for the future and safety of AI in the modern world. Follow Business Wars on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus. And for more deep dive and daily business content, listen on Wondery, the destination for business podcasts. With shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, The Best One Yet, Business Movers, and many more, Wondery means business.
T.R. Reid, longtime journalist for The Washington Post, is now an author and a speaker. His latest book, amazingly well-timed, is called A Fine Mess, A Global Quest for a Simpler, Fairer, and More Efficient Tax System. We got him on the phone and we talked about big picture tax policy stuff. Here he is.
If you had to rate the U.S. on a scale of 1 to 10 in terms of how well we are executing tax policy, what would you say?
1 to 2. We're doing a terrible job. Our code is unfair. It's incredibly complicated. It's inefficient. It puts a huge burden on the taxpayer rather than the tax collector. And we just don't bring in as much money for the effort as other countries do.
Why are we so boogered up?
A couple of reasons. One is Americans just don't like government as much as people in Europe do or East Asia do, and therefore they kind of grudge. They don't like paying it. Our overall tax burden is less than almost any other rich country, but we complain more. We pay less and complain more. And second, you know, money talks in Congress in America, and therefore any moneyed interest can get its own goody in the tax code. That's why it's 73,000 pages long. They just fill our code with all these write-offs and exemptions and loopholes. That makes everything complicated. It makes it hard to pay, hard to collect. And we have to raise the rates all the time because we're giving away so much money in these loopholes.
Well, the other thing you pointed out in the book, too, is that it is disproportionately skewed toward the rich and corporations. And that I think that's something that citizens suspect and was a big impetus behind their voting choices recently. But, is this empirically the case? Are we actually getting as screwed as we feel like we are?
Well, in the United States, we have a progressive tax code. Tax rates go from 7% to 39%. And generally, the more money you make, the more you pay, except the richest people. The top one-tenth of 1% of people in America pay tax at about 18%. A family at the median income pays more than that. No other country has this giveaway. In every country, the rich try to get their way, and they often do. But no other country has lower rates for the richer people than an average family.
I have a question related to sort of loopholes in the breaks for the rich, which is this question comes largely from my hairdresser, who is the owner of his salon. Uh-huh. I get all my good information from my hairdresser. He knows everybody. But no, so he owns a salon, and he has been working on this theory in conjunction with an economist friend of his that small businesses, much like the ever-shrinking middle class, are taking on a greater burden proportionally of taxes because they don't have the same loopholes. Like, they pay a business mm-hmm. tax rate, but they can't take advantage of all the corporate loopholes. Do you think that's true? Are we putting, like, at the federal and state level, a higher burden on both the middle class and small businesses?
You know, I think your hairdresser is onto something in tax policy, and the numbers prove it. The corporate tax, the American corporate tax paid by big corporations, as we all know, we have one of the highest rates in the world. But American corporations are so good at getting out of the tax. They've added so many giveaways and loopholes to the tax code that the corporate tax today only brings in about 8% of revenues. In the 1960s, it was a third of all the money they brought in, and the corporations have been so good at ducking tax. Guess who makes up the difference? You and I do. Small business people like your hairdresser, we're making up the difference for the corporations that have found ways not to pay.
So, I mean, you say this in the book, actually. We're sort of in that point in the tax reform cycle about every 30 or so years where you get a big overhaul of tax reform. Paul Ryan, Speaker of the House, has said we're going to get it done because it has to get done. What's it going to look like?
Yeah, well, I mean, if you believe that history repeats itself, and I do, we had a big tax code written in 1922. By 1954, it was a mess. They threw it out and rewrote it. By 1986, that one was a mess. They threw it out and rewrote it. And there's a pattern there. That's every 32 years. Well, the 32-year period is up in 2018. It is time. Our code is so cumbersome and so complex. The best thing to do is to scrap it and start over. I think Paul Ryan's right. And both Republicans and Democrats can see that. And you take away all the giveaways, all the deductions and exemptions, and then everybody loses their cherished exemption.
Right.
But if you do that, you can lower rates sharply. You get a much simpler system. And that's what we did in 1986. We took away lots and lots of goodies and loopholes, and nobody liked that. But everybody's rate went down, and everybody liked that, so the plan passed. And my argument is many countries have done it that way. We could do it again.
Do you believe that's going to happen?
Yeah. I mean, right. We're both giving each other a skeptical face.
Little side eye here.
That's what's happening.
We ought to do it. Will you buy that? We ought to do it. We could do it. We have done it. Many countries around the world have done this. This is one thing that really bugs me. Most countries, Amsterdam, London, Lima, you walk down the street and there's no H&R Block because that industry isn't necessary. And the reason is, in those countries, the government fills out the form for you, and you look and check the numbers. If they look right, you click OK. The IRS could do it, and several members of Congress, Elizabeth Warren, Dan Coats of Indiana, Ron Wyden of Oregon, have proposed that the government do this. And guess what happens? Mm-hmm. H&R Block comes in and lobbies against it.
So as it happens, we talked to the H&R Block CEO about that exact issue. And one of the because there's a bill right now, I think, making its way through Congress that would not only that would require these tax preparers to get together and offer a service to low and middle income people free tax preparation, but would bar the IRS from ever creating a tax preparation service. They say that it's because it's an inherent conflict of interest for the IRS to be the biller and the collector. What do you say to that?
Well, they say that because that protects their business. It's an inherent conflict of interest to make me work harder on my tax return so those companies can make more money. There's the conflict of interest. No, what happens in other countries is the government knows all the numbers. They fill in the form and they send it to you. If you don't like their numbers, you change them or you go in and complain. You know, no conflict because you file that return. It's just somebody else has filled it out for you. In America, you pay H&R Block. In Tokyo, you'd pay nothing because the revenue agency does it for you. We could do that too.
Well, and then one last question. We're going to do the numbers with you before we let you go because we had several people ask us this question and you did the math. Ed Stillman was one of them, said, I've long been curious about the collective cost to us in the economy to navigate taxes. Put this in dollar terms for us. How much is this costing?
Well, the IRS brags, and they're right, that they're a very efficient tax collector. They spend 35 cents for every $100 they bring in, and that's a more efficient system than many other countries have. But the reason is they stick the hard work on us, on the taxpayer. They estimate that Americans spend 6 billion hours every year just gathering the data and filing their returns. At an average wage, that would be $400 billion per year of working time. It's the equivalent of 3.1 million people working 40 hours per week. So if you take that number, just paying our taxes has become one of the biggest industries in the United States. And it doesn't have to be. It could be so much simpler.
T.R. Reid, thank you so much.
Great to be on Make Me Smart. Thanks.
I, for one, would totally volunteer to let the IRS do my taxes.
Have to be. Well, the bank that owns my credit card sends me a bill for my credit card bill, right? If it's a conflict of interest, have the IRS be that. I'm just saying.
Right. Yeah.
And banks can't, regardless of what Jamie Dimon is saying about how banks, that whole too big to fail thing, we're past that now. We're fine. We don't need all these bank regulations. I'm just saying, if I can trust them to bill me properly, I can trust the IRS.
Exactly. We should say here that we asked you and asked you and asked you for your questions. And you might have noticed when we were talking to T.R. Reid and Bill Cobb, we didn't actually use any of those questions by name and saying, here's a question from XYZ. But they informed the questions that we asked. And so we need to give a shout out here to Mike Jameson, Jeffrey Boyd, Pam Putschel. I hope I pronounced that right, Pam. I apologize. Mark Shields and Randall from San Diego, because we said it at the top. It's us doing this together. And I want to make sure that we give credit to the people who took the time to send us questions.
Absolutely. And we hope that that interview answered some of those questions. That book is super interesting,
no,
I will
book.
Say. It is really worth a read. It's fascinating.
Let's just say this again. It's about taxes and it's good.
It's kind of enraging, even. Like, you just read it and you're like, why? What is our problem?
Yeah.
But keep them coming.
Please.
We want to keep hearing from you. If you have an answer to what our problem is, that would also be awesome. MakeMeSmart@marketplace.org is our email address. You can tweet us. You can record an audio file on your phone.
Cool.
We've gotten a lot of those, and they're wonderful. And we're going to dip into some of those emails in just a minute.
All right, so we're going to hit the mailbox. Some of your thoughts and notes to us.
Where do we mail a letter?
Mailbox, except not really anymore.
I love it so much.
Not more anymore. All right, you get to do this one because this was about you.
This is the email of the week. I love this one. Whitney Hampton wrote to say, "Hi, listening to your avocado toast episode." Henceforth, by the way, that episode will only ever be known as the avocado toast episode.
Of course.
When Kevin, the manager of Cafe St. George, references the Girl Scout cookies' seasonality, and Kai jumps in to say it's not really necessary since they could be manufactured year-round, it reminds me of one of my dad's favorite days of the year when he starts seeing Malamars on grocery store shelves
again. Remember Malamars? I guess they still have Malamars.
Apparently.
I just don't eat them.
She said, I think their explanation of seasonality to maintain tradition is even flimsier than the Girl Scouts, which is presumably that the Scouts don't want to sell cookies year-round. Love the show, Whitney. I will tell you that we are currently in my most favorite time
Which
of the year.
What?
which is Reese's Easter eggs.
Oh,
or Reese's peanut butter eggs.
Really?
Yeah, because the cups are not as good as they used to be. Like, there's too much chocolate, and the peanut butter's gotten too sweet.
Whoa. Back
Reese's peanut butter cups have gone
up. Oh, you're dead to me.
Downhill.
Oh, my God.
Downhill.
Really?
The eggs are where it's at. The eggs restore the perfect balance of chocolate to peanut butter, and you get a nice, like, saltiness.
It's
like
a fabrication, though. Reese's Cups is Reese's Cups, and that's the deal.
They're the worst.
Oh, my
they've
God.
They've gotten bad. They used to be my favorite. You get out there. I'm bringing you an egg today, actually. I am in L.A.
You don't even
have to go get your own Reese's peanut butter egg.
I get a lunch hour. But anyway.
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
I don't think that's about Easter, but... You know, whatever. Maybe we'll sing more on the next episode. But we need to do a little debunking here, because here's what happened. I think it was yesterday. There was an article in the New York Times about, and I think it was probably Brooklyn, although I don't remember.
It was Brooklyn.
Where there was a freaking avocado bar. You guys, cut it out. I mean, it's so cool that so many of you, and there were lots. Richard Gunther and Tom Atkins were two of them, but many others tried avocado toast for the first time after listening to this podcast.
We got so many good
and
pictures.
They loved it, and there were converts, and we had variations like with a hard-boiled egg, and we had spicy sauce and all kinds of stuff. And that's great, but I think in pop culture terms, avocado toast now for us has jumped the shark.
No!
I think it has!
Oh.
I think it has!
Is it the new... It's like... That's what I said. Kai used the F word when he found this article.
I did.
And then I said, I think maybe avocado toast is turning into the new pumpkin spice.
Oh, which listeners or readers of my Twitter feed will know is a thing for me.
But I think all the people who just discovered it are going to disagree. I mean, it's not. Oh,
look,
I'm
still going to eat it.
But
I just, there's an avocado bar in Brooklyn. Stop it.
It's like you sensed it. And that's why careful listeners to the show will remember that the first time this ever came up was when Kai was describing his breakfast and he said that he had some toast with some avocado. And
right.
I was like, oh, Peanut, you don't want to call it avocado toast because it's so bougie. And that's how this all started he knew it was about to become pumpkin spice and he didn't want to say it was avocado toast.
Circle,
I don't care.
The circle it of life right there. That's what that was. That was
awesome.
A circle of a meme. All right. We're going to end right there. So listen, here's what we really, 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 really want you to do, assuming you've listened this far. Go to iTunes or however you get this podcast and subscribe for us. Would you leave us a review? Share us with your friends. Do whatever you want. Just please listen and share the wealth, will you?
Yeah. Tell your friends. Keep emailing us. MakeMeSmart@Marketplace.org. You can go to our website. I am going to write an avocado toast blog post. Also, I want that on a t-shirt today. That will include photos of all of your first try avocado toast efforts.
Which were awesome.
I gotta say, the hard-boiled egg is genius.
I would prefer actually a slightly soft inner yolk, but that's just...
Well, see, I always put a fried egg on there.
Yeah, that's too loose.
Ooh, a soft-boiled egg was perfect.
Just a hair on the hard side.
Have you ever...
you know what they're going to do? They're going to play the cue music now to get us out.
Have you ever used a sous vide machine to make a hard-boiled...
No, I never had. Speaking of bougie.
It's amazing. I mean, that's super bougie, but it's true. You were right! Here are the credits. Turns out we have to go.
Oh, my God. Make Me Smart is produced by Jenny Josephson, Bridget Bondner, Raghu Manavalan, and the senior producer, Nancy Fargali. This week's program was engineered by Jake Gorski. His first time down the chute on that one. Our theme music is composed by Ben Talladay and Daniel Ramirez.
They work here, too.
They do.
The executive producer of Marketplace is Sitara Nieves, and the senior vice president and general manager is Deborah Clark.
We get paid for this.
Sous vide. It's where it's at.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.